Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio, as you always are, Fridays, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time. And thank you for listening, everyone, wherever you're at in the world right now. So nice to have you guys. I welcome your calls, and also, as usual, if you'd like to email me, that's where I get a lot of good questions as well. It's straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, comes right on in here to the radio station, LA Talk Radio. And, of course, you can give us a call, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And today's subject, I put it out there on social media, and I don't know if you guys checked it out or not. I did get a couple of responses saying, ooh, tell me more. So I'm going to be telling you more with my special guest today, who is an amazing woman and has gone through some experiences that none of us have had in our lives, especially at her age. So we're talking about being subject and influenced in a time of need in your life or a time of exploration in your life by a cult, and how various cults can sort of suck you into their belief systems and the, you know, tools that they use to get you into all those things, to start believing that, you know, this is wonderful, this is going to save me, these people are wise, and all of the techniques that they use to do that. And my guest today has written a book. It's called The Burn Zone, a memoir. And my guest is Renee Linnell. You probably know about her, you've seen her on social media. I'll just briefly give you an introduction so, you know, you can get an idea of Renee's exploration. But I want her to be talking more about her life and what she's been through and how she actually got out of this cult. And after 7 years of faithfully following her Buddhist teacher, Renee realized she'd been severely brainwashed. And she's really intelligent. She graduated magna cum laude with a double degree. She's traveled to nearly 50 countries alone before she turned 35. She was a model, surf model, and a professional tango dancer. She started 5 different companies and was getting an MBA from New York University. How did someone like her end up in a cult? How did that happen? She's so educated. She's brilliant. She's such a, you know, self-motivated, self-made woman who's rocking it all. How did this happen? Well, we're going to find out right now. My special guest on the air, Renee Linnell. Hi, Renee. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Michelle. I'm doing well. Thank Good. You. It's nice to be here.
Oh, it's so nice to have you on the air. And great to read your book. What a story. I mean,
Thank you.
You know, a lot of people say, I'm going to write my memoirs of my trauma and the things I've been through. And I was like, okay, that's good. Good. Go for it. It's therapeutic, but this is like taking folks through a journey. Actually, you know, it's a real page turner. You want to go, what happened to her next? Because I mean, you're such a worldly, educated, business savvy woman. You know, you started 5 different companies. And how did someone like you, Renee, end up brainwashed in a cult? I mean, I'm just like, what?
I know. Well, that's the million-dollar question. Yeah. And the answer is slowly and after the perfect storm of events.
Yeah.
But I also realized that so many of us that from the outside looking in are incredibly successful and seem to have it all.
Yes.
Can still tend to be unhappy inside or feel like something's missing. And then we think there's something really wrong with us because
right.
we have everything and we're still not happy.
Right.
And I don't think there's a lot of dialogue out there about that.
Right.
And people say, oh, it's inside you, it's inside you. And I realized after everything I went through that, yes, what I was looking for is inside me,
right.
but it took a complete shattering of my life to find it.
Yes.
And yes. So, and I was just desperate to be loved and desperate to feel like I belonged. And most of my family died when I was young. So I was always searching.
Aww.
There had to be more to life than what I was learning in church and in school.
Well,
and
sure.
when I was 33, I walked into a meditation seminar and I found what I had been searching for, which was peace and
oh,
a
wow.
tribe of like-minded people. And I stuck around.
Wow. That is amazing. So what you're saying is, you know, you kind of allowed these people to sort of infiltrate your belief system and give you help because, you know, you really did fall down emotionally and spiritually because you did lose a lot of people in your life. So, you know, particularly at a time of grief. So you were more susceptible. Is that what you're saying?
I was, and I do think that the beautiful thing about grief and life-shattering events is it does soften us and break us down and open our minds to other ways of seeing the world,
yes.
which is amazing. But my mind was just so open to anything different and anything that said that we reincarnated and that we found loved ones life after
right,
life.
Right.
And being raised Catholic didn't work for me. And so what this seminar was Tantric Buddhist Mysticism. And she said she was going to teach us to meditate, which was the hardest thing in the world to do, because if you can completely still and sharpen your mind, then you can walk through life unaffected by anything going on around you.
Yes.
And then she said she would teach us to use our careers as our spiritual path. And every moment in our career is an offering to the divine.
Mm.
And then she said, if you do that, you work so well that you get promoted, you make more money, you create a life where you meditate better, and you give back to the world through philanthropy. So I thought, that sounded great.
Yeah, it does.
Sign me up.
I'd go there. Hey, sign me up for that one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so?
And then I parallel it to any toxic relationship where if you go on a first date and somebody hits you or says something very abusive, you don't go on a second date, but they yeah. romance you and they build you up
right.
and they make you feel loved and wanted and needed. And so that's happened in the beginning. There was a lot of romancing and we were all given these incredibly empowering tasks. Like, I had been a professional dancer, and I was supposed to become a computer programmer and
yes.
then get a black belt in karate.
You were rocking it, girl.
And then I was running her business and learning to meditate.
Mm.
So for the first 2 years, there was a lot of buildup. But by then, again, like a toxic relationship, then they manipulate all your time. You don't
right.
have as much time for friends and family and activities
sure.
you love, so your support structure goes away.
Oh, absolutely.
And then they introduce self-doubt.
Wow, that is such an amazing story. So, and you said you were running her business after a while, the cult leader?
I was.
Oh, my God. She talked you into doing that. So,
yes.
Oh, so it's Lakshmi? Is that who that was?
Lakshmi.
That's what
I changed the names.
Yes. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
To protect your back and also the cult, I guess. I don't know. But no, that.
Yeah, well, yeah. I just really wanted the story to be so much more about my journey
exactly.
to healing and wholeness and forgiveness versus a story about, you know, them.
Yes, exactly. So I know that we were talking about sort of the influence last week of men over women, especially in the workplace. How it's different, you know, sometimes dealing, and I don't mean to be sexist, but it really is. But do you think that because of the cult leader was a woman that she sort of earned your trust a little more easily than if she had been a man?
Absolutely. Wow. Yes. And my because most of my family died when I was young, and my dad died when I was 15, and then I was left with an alcoholic, emotionally abusive mother.
Oh, my goodness.
I never had a very strong female influence in my life.
Oh, yeah.
So when this woman appeared, and she was dressed in a, like, Armani tailor fit black business suit and stiletto heels.
Wow.
Saying that not only was she going to teach me to find peace, but she was going to teach me to have a wonderful career and give back to the world through philanthropy. I just thought, I really want to learn from her.
Right. So so they were promising a lot of different things that sounded really wonderful, and finding peace and going within. And so tell me what was happening, you know, in terms of, of course, you became her financial aid, seemingly, like you said. And what was happening in terms of your finances? Were they taking a lot of money from you, saying that, you know, oh, you need to donate to us because we're spiritually helping other people? Or what was that?
More or less. Yeah. The event started at $5 an event. And then once we became students, we saw her once a month, and it was $150. And then it went up to $500 a month, and then it went up to $1,200 a month.
Ooh.
And then we were also doing these empowerment trips where we would each pay $10,000 on top of the trip cost once a year.
Mm.
And we were encouraged to donate as a thank you. But, you know, we justified this because we were making more money because she was coaching us in our careers.
Right. Uh-huh. So she was coaching you spiritually as well. So you basically, you were sort of paying for her designer suits and rocking those stilettos, right?
I mean, yes.
That's what was going on.
Yes, I mean, she had this cell of people that she was sending out in the world to make a lot of money, and that money was coming back to her.
Right. Something that, oh my God. Okay, despite the fact that she was really looking good and you know, presenting really well, what was fascinating to me in the book is that your cult leader insisted that women weren't allowed to be sexy or beautiful because the male gaze would drain their power. You must have had a lot of power drain, girl, because you're really beautiful. So,
thank you.
What's up with that? I mean, could women be sexy and sexual and still be spiritual? I mean, that's... That sort of cracks
me up.
Well,
according to her, no. But as I went through this journey, and especially coming out the other side, and especially with everything going on, you know, with women's rights, I'm realizing that as women, it is our duty to turn our light up as bright as possible, especially as we get older and we get filled up with wisdom.
Right.
And I think to turn our light down because we think we're no longer beautiful, or we think we no longer have something off, you know, desirable, or we're afraid, it does the entire planet a disservice. And
yes.
So I really think the more spiritual we get and the more tapped in we are with our source and our own alignment,
right,
the more beautiful we become because we radiate that light. And of course it's sexual as well, because our sexual chakra is where we generate life.
Well, that's true.
So it makes sense that energy should constantly be moving through us and out into the world.
Oh, I love that description. That sure makes sense. And, you know, it just reminded me also in the cult, as you describe it, women, like you said, weren't allowed to be sexy or beautiful, and being sexual and all that. Sometimes in more, traditional religions, I mean, that's also a no-no too. I mean, you have to, you know, basically withhold having sex until you're married and that kind of thing. So that's interesting as well, some of the dogma that goes along with other traditional religions. This is not a religion per se. This was a cult, flat out. But
it is true, because I do believe, you know, because sex is so powerful, and when we do make love to someone else and we do orgasm, in that moment we do feel God or source or love or stillness or quiet or peace or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And so if we can find that on our own, then
exactly,
we don't need, you know, the church or the structure. And so, of course, that's fearful if we're all out there finding love and connection and God and source on our own.
Right.
And also, I think women's sexuality is incredibly powerful, and I think there are a lot of men out there that are threatened by that power because it's like the one thing they can't control. And so,
right, exactly.
Unfortunately, we have been told to turn it down, shut it off, hide it, you know,
Yes, we have.
It's time for us to stop, I think.
Yeah, I know. It's just, it's kind of like, what, you know, and how is that a threat, you know, to the cult, or how is that a threat to the religion? I just don't sort of get that, you know. But anyway, you survived, and you know, you were looking for a lot more in your life. And how long were you with this cult?
I was with them for 4 years, and then all the drama happened that I talk about in the book with the male teacher and the female teacher then wanting to distance me from the group. And so she gave me an impossible task, which was to go get an MBA from one of the hardest business schools and then start a business that made $10 million profit after taxes.
Yes.
And so fortunately, I got thrown out in a way. I got ostracized. I wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. And so I was on my own, but I was still faithful for another 2.5 years.
Oh,
so altogether, it was 6.5 years that I was under their influence.
Oh, bless your heart. Now, can you describe that story a little bit? Just give a little taste of that part of your memoir and your book. I love that.
Okay. Well, the plot thickens.
Yes.
And so there's this female spiritual teacher named Lakshmi.
Yes.
And she has a right-hand man / bodyguard named Vishnu,
uh-huh.
who was 12 years older than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started running the company, I started spending all my time with him.
Okay.
And she was disappearing, not
uh-huh.
around as much. And I assumed she was off meditating herself into further stages of enlightenment.
Yes.
And that I had been given this amazing trust to be with who I thought was her boyfriend.
Yes.
And, you know, her best friend. And so as we spent more and more time together, he started seducing me.
Oh,
and
no.
then I became his spiritual consort, which is when a spiritual teacher takes a student as a lover.
Uh-huh.
Right. And again, I thought that this was my way of helping her. And then it turned out that not only did she not know about it, but that they were lovers and she was furious.
Oh, my God.
So it was terrible. I had made this woman my whole life, my whole everything, and then I found out I was sleeping with her boyfriend.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Right?
And so, yeah, and that was devastating. And, you know, there's a lot of drama around that written about in the book. But then, so then she called me up and wanted me out and as far away from everyone as possible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Of course she did, you know. And by the way, when she was out meditating or being spiritual, she was doing actually therapy shopping. That's what we call it.
Probably with all that money.
Yeah, exactly. But oh man, I am so sorry. So how did you come about to meet these people in this cult? How did you find them?
Well, that's actually the introduction of the book, which is the first time I met her. And I walked into a meditation seminar, and I walked in late, and there was one seat open in the front row, and I sat in it just seconds before she walked onto the stage, and I was expecting an older woman with long gray hair and mala beads and a white robe,
right.
And out walks this gorgeous young woman with long dark hair and this Taylor Fitz suit and stilettos.
Mm.
And I was expecting spa music, and she put on really loud techno music from Navras, or called Navras, from one of the final fight scenes in the Matrix movies.
Right, I know that music. Oh my God!
And she put on sunglasses, and I thought this is all weird, but she's pretty powerful and amazing.
Yeah.
And then I closed my eyes and instantly felt this energy shoot up through my spine and out the top of my head, and everything went white, and I disappeared.
Wow.
And my mind exploded into the most exquisite peace I had ever felt.
Wow. So what was that about, do you suppose?
Well, and what that was about, I've read about it after, and it's called samadhi, and it's the highest state of meditation there is, it's what all the saints and mystics talk about, and it really is what we are made of.
Yes.
It's what our minds are made of.
Yes,
we are love, and
yes,
we are light.
Mm-hmm.
And when our minds aren't completely filled up with junk thinking and fear and all of our, you know, thoughts that are the same every day, we tap into what we naturally are, which is that white light and love. And I just happened to be blessed with that beautiful experience the first time I really meditated, but I erroneously attributed it to her. I thought that happened because of her.
Sure, of course. But you were just sort of open to it, and And again, possibly it was the stimulation going around you as well. And, you know, there's binaural beats and, you know what I'm saying? That
music, I've talked to different people about that experience. I talked to a soldier who was on the battlefield after 4 days and four nights of fighting. Oh. And he said it was nighttime and he was watching the tracers go by from the bullets and he had an experience of samadhi. Wow. So it just happens, you know, it just happens when it happens. And I just thought it was because of her.
Wow, that's fascinating. So do you think that you are, we all have to be ready for samadhi? Do you think that it's sort of a state that we're ready for, or it's just sort of something that just kind of spontaneously happens to us that we're just boom, something just happens in the environment, and I don't know.
It's a great question. Yeah. I've never thought about that, and as you were asking, I was getting goosebumps.
Oh,
and
good.
I do think that maybe we do have to be ready for it.
Yes, because I'm very, you know, and I hate to say the word spiritual, but I mean, I am. I'm very involved in all types of, you know, sort of religious studies and, you know, spirituality myself and finding the inner self. And I'm totally aligned with you and your thinking, Renee, in terms of it's all about love. It is. And we all have that power within, and we all get to decide, you know, how we interpret that. And you know, so it really is something to, I think, evolving. And when we're searching, I think possibly our brains have that aha experience, to be open to experiencing the samadhi. I think a lot of people, and I also believe that if we try too hard, you know, like, Esther Hicks talks about resistant thinking, you know, and she says, no, don't put so much resistance into it. Just allow, you know, be very zen and just allow stuff and be okay with it and be patient and just.
I really agree with that. And I do think a lot of us on a spiritual path, I know I certainly was trying too hard and I was willing to get rid of every part of me that was human in order to become spiritual. And I thought I would meditate myself through some portal into enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And after everything I went through, I realized, first of all, we're in these human bodies to experience life in these human bodies.
Yes.
And that means the good with the bad and the ugly with the beautiful and the love with the hate.
Sure.
And it also means that we're going to make mistakes and that, you know, I don't think we're supposed to be these walking angels. I think we're supposed to be human, and it's really messy. And I finally realized I can be saint-like every day by leaving a larger tip or getting in my car 15 minutes earlier so I'm not a jerk in traffic or holding the door open for somebody and always going back to love and kindness versus fear and hate.
Mm. And that, you know, what's so interesting is that many times, you know, in supposed spiritual centers, we're taught to go through, you know, all these different phases and explorations and things, which is lovely and everything. But, you know, the way you just explained it, and as you do in your book, it's rather simple. It's just, it's just sort of getting in touch with that higher, whatever you want to call it, frequency or the light within. And just sort of spreading that on a daily basis, you know, peacefully to others. And we can really, you're right, Renee, you know, we can really touch people in so many ways by just a smile or just by not being that jerk in traffic or just, you know, opening a door or helping an elderly person, you know, with something, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's how we spread a little bit by little bit that positive love and energy out into the world, and it really is contagious, I think, you know.
It is. And I also finally realized the whole thing about it starting within is that when we love ourselves, my journey out of brainwashing in total brokenness was a journey of self-love.
Yes.
And I realized when we do love ourselves, we do want better lives for ourselves. We do make better choices for ourselves. And then we start to take care of ourselves, which brings us joy.
Exactly.
And then when we're joyful, because we're finally allowing ourselves to have things that make us happy, you know, like Esther Hicks would say, allowing it in, then we're actually happy. Because, you know, when you're in love, you're happy. And when you're having a fun day, you're happy. And then you just want everyone else to be happy. Just naturally, you start to be kind.
It's so true. And, you know, I believe what you said also about, you know, we were kind of put here, you know, in the three-dimensional, you know, physical sense. And we do have to go through these certain experiences in order to learn. That's what it's all about. It's the journey, the contrast, as you said, Esther would say. And you have to find out what you don't want in order to know kind of what you do want. But we need to experience the pain, the bittersweet, the fear.
Yeah.
And all that. So it's really true. It is a journey, as you describe in your book, you know, the journey that you had, you know, of, you know, getting through what you got through. And so,
yeah,
so good. You know, it's amazing. You know, the book, by the way, in case you just tuned in, guys, it's called The Burn Zone, a memoir. And I'm speaking with the author, Renee Linnell. She is an amazing woman. And after 7 years of faithfully following her Buddhist teacher, you know, she realized that she'd been severely brainwashed. So a lot of the techniques that most cults use, Renee, are sort of appealing to people who may be in a vulnerable position and looking, you know, just sort of more in their lives. So like you said, you know, had many losses in your family, and you grew up with a mom who was an alcoholic, an abusive alcoholic, and that is so difficult. I really understand that. And so they appeal to your vulnerability. But what are some of the other psychological things that they appeal to within a person in order to lure them in?
Well, I definitely think there's a very deep need in the human psyche to be loved and appreciated. And as I went through this, I realized it's so fascinating. So we each incarnate as this gooey ball of love. And out of 8 billion people on the planet, we're the only version of us there is, which is amazing when you think about it. We're completely unique.
Wow.
And then we go through childhood and adolescence, and we try to hide everything about us that's different, and we try to blend in and be like everyone else.
Mm.
And then we go through young adulthood and adulthood desperate to find somebody who sees us as unique and wants just us or loves just us.
Right.
And then when we do, it's intoxicating.
Mm.
And so, and I think we believe from a young age that we're broken and that there's something wrong with us because what makes us different, you know, we're told to blend in or keep our voices down or don't be so loud or don't be so weird or you're not allowed to love that person because he or she's the same sex as you are.
Mm-hmm.
All these things.
Right.
And so a big part of my message is your difference is your destiny, because what makes us different is actually when we honor those things and cherish those things and celebrate those things, life becomes so much more fun. We stop trying to hide it.
Right.
But I think a lot of us can be drawn to very toxic relationships, whether it's a cult or whether it's a romantic situation or just a friendship, because we just want to be loved and appreciated.
That's so true. And, you know, in the psychological realm here, I studied and worked with a lot of folks who, you know, focus on the well, they're called personality disorder types. Axis 2 cluster B is what we call them. And there's a whole kind of narcissistic kind of vibe behind, seemingly behind the cult that you're talking about that you got lured into, and others as well. And that being said, I mean, that narcissistic charm, there's just a manipulation in appealing to everyone. They know what to say. They know. And that goes the same in relationships. I mean, I hear every day, you know, a lot of women, because more men have that personality disorder than women, get lured into a charming, you know, they turn out to be the bad boys, but they're charming and attractive. And
they know how to present themselves.
Well, exactly.
And I think as women, especially also men, but we're taught to not have boundaries and to not listen to our own internal guidance. So as a little girl, you're supposed to go hug somebody that you don't want to hug, and you're supposed to smile even though you don't feel like smiling, and not get your dress dirty.
Yep.
And so, well, it's such an intrinsic yearning to love, because we are love and we love to love. We're not taught to have good boundaries. And so with a narcissist, we're able to think, oh, it's me, I did something wrong, or if I had only acted differently, then there wouldn't be this drama.
Right.
And so And I think when there's not physical abuse and when there's psychological and emotional abuse, you don't see the marks.
That's right.
When you look in the mirror, so then you can always say, well, it's me. And
right.
I know for me, going through this thing with the cult, they said we had to sand down our egos to be spiritual, and that our egos would make us not want to change. So every time my intuition kicked in and said, enough is enough, you have to get out, I would think, well, my ego's so strong, I don't want to change. I'll never be able to become enlightened.
Yes. No, exactly. That's so true. It's fascinating, you know, that whole psyche of, and, you know, you were talking about the emotional abuse. I mean, it is... You know, I know that a lot of us, you know, with the manipulators, sometimes we're so needy and we like you said, we just want to be loved. But if you don't mind me, you know, asking you, Renee, I know that you had a tough time, you know, because your dad had passed and growing up with your mom, who was, you know, an alcoholic, and she had a lot of her own issues, which is really sad. And, you know, you want to love her for those problems that she experienced. But did you... go to psychotherapy or did you sort of, were you searching for things yourself that really helped you sort of deal with growing up, you know, with that environment?
I didn't. When my dad died when I was 15, we just never talked about it. My mother started drinking herself to death and taking pills. There's no therapy offered. I just had to figure it out on my own at 15 years old.
Bless your heart.
But after I went through this whole drama with the cult and the brainwashing I burned everything I owned, and I distanced myself from all my friends and my brother, and I just was all alone and trying to figure out what the... Oh, and then I ended up in the New York Tabloids, which is in a huge failed business venture. Lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I finally went, okay, I need therapy. I need some serious therapy, and I don't need to just undo the last 7 years in the cult. I need to go all the way back to childhood, and I need to figure out what the heck happened that made me... people treat me so badly for so long.
Sure. That's bless your heart, and good for you, girl, that you did it. And you know, they're really... you're amazing. You know, that's the thing. There's such a profound you know, they talk about milestone ages, that we shouldn't be dealing, you know, with certain trauma in our lives. And 14 and 15 year old girls, when they have a major trauma or loss in their lives and then see another lack of support system go down the tubes, you know, it's like the worst age, because at that particular age, we're discovering who we are, our identity, and who we are and how we relate to the world and what, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's really fascinating, because that is really a milestone in our age of growth, and to have all that happen to you, bless your heart, you know, because it's really a scary time in our lives. We're trying to figure out who we are.
Yeah.
So you got through it, and you went through therapy, and it helped you a lot, I'm sure, and understand. And of course, you know, again, we all need love, and we all need support. We all need to understand what the heck's going on. who can I grasp onto? We all need that. And a lot of that too relates back to the old attachment theory stuff, you know. And when we don't feel securely attached, or we don't, you know, have that loving environment, it's very tough. And then you find an environment that you think, in the cult, that's your family and going to help you and raise you and emotionally, and then, my goodness, I mean, you were really kind of spiritually robbed, basically, is what happened to you. So
but you know, that beautiful thing, I kept thinking as I was going through the really broken parts and realizing my teachers were not good people, there's a saying that, actually, of course, now I'm going to forget it. But it's
That's
something
right.
about if you're a sincere student, that you'll always be taken care of. And and I know in the Course in Miracles they say, in your vulnerability, your defense, or in your defenselessness, your safety lies. Mm. And I did have tremendous faith that I was going to be taken care of, because all I really wanted to do was become the better version of myself and spread love and light.
Mm-hmm.
And so, while it was a really difficult journey, I have to say, I do love the person I am on the other side.
That is so beautiful. And I think a lot of people really need to understand. And I think a lot of my listeners are psychologically and spiritually savvy, but you know, I suggest that a lot in my work, and you have to start from within in order to sort of understand and deal with what was going on around you. If there's trauma in the family or in anything in a relationship, you know, love, partner, relationship. But you're so right. You have to understand that it's not narcissism. When you say love that which you are, it's not about narcissism. Yeah. It's just about a pure moments of practice of understanding that it's okay. It's okay. And, you know, you sometimes parents, okay, they're people. And they don't understand. They're coping with their own unresolved issues. They're just folks. They're just people. And we're all in this together to sort of crawl our way and find our way through reality and truth and experiences. And hopefully, you know, we find people in our realm of like thinking when we get a little more settled emotionally, and we attract the positives. You know, we attract people who are more positive around us. So I think you're so right, you know, when you talk in your book about where you really came to. And I'm so happy that you can spread the word and share that you do, you know, through your self-love. And you, that's something else that I wanted to point out is, you know, I've been listening a lot to Dr. Joe Dispenza's audio tapes. I had him on my show a while back, and he was talking about the truth, the belief system. We have to believe it in order for it to really manifest and be real. If we're just saying affirmations, we're just saying, I am loved. you have to believe it and embrace it in order for it to happen. And in your brain, you know, that's the way we learn, and the heart brain coherence, you know, this is the way we learn and can manifest and or just be peaceful in our everyday lives. So it's interesting you said that, you know, about just really coming in contact with and loving yourself and knowing. Well, and it's the knowing.
Interesting,
right?
Because people go, well, what does that mean, loving myself? Mm-hmm. And for me, it meant, first of all, realizing we're all broken and we're all wounded. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, oh, I'm so messed up, or I'm so broken, or I'm so wounded, it's, we have to get over that, because we all are. Just some people just hide it better than others.
Yes.
And then I realize, when we realize that it's actually the cracks in us that allow the light in and that allow us to have compassion for our fellow humans, then we get over the fact that we're not perfect. And then then the self-love for me was treating myself to nice things, like paying a little more for a hotel room that was actually comfortable.
Yes. Or
spending my day off doing something I actually wanted to do rather than chores. And so nurturing myself the way I would nurture a child that I loved, and treating myself to the things I would treat her to.
Right.
And not making her go to lunch with someone she doesn't want to go to lunch with. All these little ways to self-love that then I just realized filled me up with so much love that then I was loving and kind.
Mm. It's so true.
And then I believed in magic and miracles again.
There
and
you
then
go.
When I believed in them, I saw them happen. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
What is that? And, you know, I don't even know if it was Rumi who said that, or I just heard it from Dr. Wayne Dyer, you know, and he said, if you change the way you look at the world around you will change, you know, and that's the whole thing, basically.
It's so true. And that was one of the most damaging things that the cult did to me, is they taught me to fear what they called the occult, these dark hidden forces that were going to mess with my mind.
Oh, no.
And that everyone out there was going to steal my energy, and they weren't walking the same path I was walking, so they weren't as enlightened, so they didn't vibrate as highly, and so they were going to be these dark negative energies that were going to hurt me in all these different ways. And as I started to view the world that way, the world became that way, and that's how I got so incredibly taken advantage of in New York. And so I had to then reprogram. One day I was sitting in a coffee shop, and that song, Nothing's Gonna Change My World, by John Lennon, came on, and I just started crying, and I said, I want to love and trust again. I'm just going to have boundaries, and I'm going to listen to my emotional guidance system when they warn me, but I'm not going out in the world thinking it's a bad place and everyone's evil. And so I switched back to, it's a beautiful place and there are angels everywhere, and now I have really good boundaries, and I don't let people who you know, pop up on the radar as narcissists or mm-hmm. sociopaths yep. enter my inner circle anymore.
Wow.
And I don't let people treat me badly, but I still go out in the world loving people and expecting the best.
Right. Oh, that is, you're amazing. You're such a healthy person. I'm just,
Thank you.
You know, really.
Well, I had to get completely shattered by the sledgehammer of life.
Sounds like it, I know. But
I have a wide open heart with boundaries. Oh. That's a really strong boundary.
Yeah, well, you know what? Good for you. You learn those boundaries and assertiveness and all that. And I guess you might say, just as you were open and ready for the samadhi experience, you were open and ready. See, so that's why the John Lennon song came through to you in the coffee shop.
Yeah.
You know, we got to look for those moments and miracles. No matter where you're at, you know, sitting in the coffee shop. But no, it's so true. And you're a stronger, wiser, a more amazing person for it. And you share this in your book, guys. By the way, The Burn Zone, a memoir. You got to read it. It's a fascinating story of how the lovely Renee Linnell, who I have on the air with me right now, realized that she'd been severely brainwashed after faithfully following her Buddhist teacher. They sort of kind of shrouded themselves as a Buddhist cult. It wasn't a cult, but I mean, they didn't call themselves a cult, but a Buddhist belief system. But when you come back down to the Buddhist theory, they would, real Buddhists wouldn't do that. I mean, right?
Well, it's the antithesis of Buddhism, right? That's
exactly.
What I think also makes the story fascinating.
Yes.
Because when you think of cults, you don't think of Buddhism.
No.
Exactly. Yeah, I did one interview on Fox News, and the guy started off by saying, so what made you decide to join a cult? And I said, nobody decides to join a cult. It's not like, that sounds like an interesting life experience. I'm going to go get brainwashed.
Right, exactly.
I mean, so you don't think it's a cult when you walk in and join. Mm-hmm. You just hopefully figure that out after you're around for a while and your whole thought system has been manipulated and changed and your whole life has fallen apart.
Exactly, girl. And do you think a lot of the strength sort of that you gathered from your early environment and sort of your own survival mechanisms, you know, traveling the world and going so many places and creating your businesses and doing all the things you did, do you think that also had a lot to do with your ability to sort of empower yourself to say, hey, what the heck's going on here? You know? Wait a minute.
Well, I think both. I think it's one of the reasons I stayed, because even though I had that amazing life, I was still so soul sick and empty inside. Mm. So I finally said, okay, I've been living life my way, where I do everything my way for 33 years, and it's not working, even though I have this beautiful, amazing life from the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try letting somebody tell me what to do.
Right.
But then I think it definitely helped me come out the other side and have faith in myself and trust in myself and know that I could make it through. I hear as I go around speaking that a lot of people in cults as severe as mine were don't ever make it out or ever make it back to sanity.
Yes, exactly.
Which is very sad to hear.
Right. Oh, it really is. Did you ever meet Hoyt Richards? He's an older guy, and he was a model himself, like you were. An American actor, and he was one of the biggest names in modeling, actually, in the late 1980s. See, you're too young for that. You wouldn't remember that. In the 1990s, but he appeared in hundreds of advertising campaigns. I mean, huge, you know, Ralph Lauren, Burberry, Cartier. He was like the model back then. And he himself, and you know, talks about, you know, being lured in by a cult because he was searching, you know, for who he was. He didn't want to be, you know, known as this beautiful model guy who, you know, he wanted to go deeper, and this cult sucked him in. So it's a fascinating story, too. I just wondered if you had ever met him, because, you know, sometimes people who are, you know, like-minded and sort of going after a certain, you know, sort of helpful, you know, group out there sort of come together and communicate, so... Hoyt Richards, H-O-Y-T.
No,
yeah, that might be interesting for you to connect with him too, because he has a great story as well. Not quite as adventurous and not quite as exhilarating and exciting as yours, but
But I do, yeah. I do think that you find, and that's why we see so many celebrities joining cults,
right.
Because there is not enough dialogue out there about people that, quote, have everything and are still upset or searching or empty
right.
inside.
Right.
And again, what I realize is we are really searching for our connection to our source, whether
right.
you want to call it God or love
right.
or whatever you want to call it. And then when we find a group that finally helps us feel that connection,
mm-hmm.
we erroneously attribute it to the teacher or the group. And
exactly.
then the narcissist leading the group,
mm-hmm.
it's in their best interest to keep us thinking that we need them or the group in order to have that beautiful feeling of connection.
Mm.
But
God.
I did yeah. realize it all does come back to love. When we're loving mm. and giving and kind and mm. compassionate and patient and understanding, we feel so good about ourselves and we feel so good inside.
It's true.
And so it really is as simple as just doing that.
It's so true. And you'll put it out there into the universe as well. And it is contagious sometimes. And you do.
Yeah, it comes back.
You know, it really does. If you were to give some advice to listeners as to what they could do every day, sort of little things they could do every day just to sort of center themselves or feel better about themselves, what would that be?
I love that question.
Thanks.
I really believe in meditating, and everybody thinks, oh, I can't meditate. Mm-hmm. My mind is really too active. And what I've learned is if you commit to 10 minutes a day,
mm-hmm. yes,
I say 10, even though 15 is better, because
yeah.
for 10, usually your mind gets louder,
right.
and then the last 5 minutes, it actually gets quiet. But
right.
some people think 15 is too much. But I really think if you can commit to just spending 15 minutes a day every day just trying
mm-hmm.
to get quiet,
yeah.
it'll change your life in magnificent ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that each one of us has the activities that we love that make our hearts sing, and we have to find a way to fit that into our everyday life
yes.
because it recenters us, and it's different for everybody.
Yes.
You know, some people it's surfing, some people it's knitting, some people it's playing a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And nature, I think nature always helps reset. And I
mm-hmm.
think when we're in nature and we're doing things we love and we're kind to ourselves
mm-hmm.
and we get up a little bit earlier each day to just sit and quiet mm-hmm. for 15 minutes
mm-hmm.
to start our day that way.
Yes.
I think those are just three really easy techniques to completely shift a person's life.
Mm, that's beautiful. And thank you for that, because I know I have a lot of folks coming in to see me in my office, and they say, what can I do every day to, and I'm there with you girls, meditate. And, oh, but I can't sit there and go, oh, for, I said, it's not about that.
Yeah.
You don't have
when
to
I
do
think that,
that
there yeah. is, it's a, there's yeah. a misinterpretation
yes.
about what meditating is, and everyone thinks they have to stop their mind. And it's,
right.
what I love the Rumi quote that says, if you knew eternity was talking to you, would you get quiet enough to listen? And
oh,
I feel
yeah.
like what you're saying to eternity is
yes.
for 10 or 15 minutes every day,
yes.
you have unimpeded access to give me the answers I seek. And you're just saying, I'm just going to be quiet enough. I'm just going to try to be quiet enough
mm,
to listen.
That's so true.
And, yeah.
Just be quiet, everybody. Just, you know.
Just try.
And you know, like,
I figure if
yeah.
every single, imagine yeah. if with 8 billion people, if we
oh,
all just spent our
God.
Morning, every morning, 15
yes.
minutes trying to just get quiet and be the best version of ourselves when we walked out the door, that's what would change the world.
That's exactly right, Renee, and self-love. And again, it's at first thing in the morning, you know, you're coming out of that Delta REM stage and your brain's ready. You can't just pop your computer on and start going, you know, going to the social media. Don't do that. Go out on your patios
yeah.
and sit and
it's not a nice
breathe.
Thing to do to ourselves.
No.
It's like, would you ask your child to get out of bed and go straight to do some homework?
Right.
No, you'd let your child wake up slowly and have the breakfast they love and
oh.
have some time in their cozy PJs. So why
oh.
do we do that to ourselves?
That's so true. So true. Renee, we're just about out of time here, but I wanted to thank you so much for being on the couch with me today and sharing your book, The Burn Zone, a memoir, all that you've been through. It's a really good read, guys, if you want to pick it up. The best way is ReneeLinnell.com, right? Is that the best way to find out more about you and get your book?
That's the best way to find out more about me and my story,
mm-hmm.
my crazy story. And then the book is available if you just, right now, if you put in The Burn Zone,
mm-hmm.
it shows up as the top hit, I think,
sure
on
does.
Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And your local bookstore, if you have a favorite local indie bookstore, they'll order it for you.
There you go. All right. Renee, you're just the best. Thank you so much for, you know, being
you,
such
Dr. a... Thank you,
Dr. How are you? Oh, thank you, honey. And, you know, good luck to you and your journeys, and I look forward to reading your next book. I know you've got another
one
in there.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Take good care of yourself.
Okay, you too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. All right. Again, Renee Linnell, author and a wonderful woman who's so well educated, been through so many experiences. She is an amazing businesswoman, was a model, and got sort of lost after 7 years of faithfully following a teacher. She got into a cult and realized, whoa, what's going on here, and completely changed her life and got out of it. And if you know somebody who's been in a cult or yourself, and you're sort of wondering if you are, this is the book to read. All right, everybody, you can get off the couch now. But stay tuned next week. Got more great shows coming up for you about self-realization. And don't forget that you got to take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world. This is Dr. Michelle. Bye-bye.
Got you on my mind again tonight. Seeing flashing lights.